Hey guys, welcome to the Raised Rowdy Podcast. My name is Kurt Ozon.
And I'm Nikki T.
And we're joined here by the Wilder Blue. Woo!
Yeah.
Yay!
Yes. Thanks for being here, guys. The Raised Rowdy Podcast started in Green Room, so it's kind of cool to be back in one here.
Very nice.
Yeah.
We are in the belly of the beast in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yes.
So
I'm a Steelers fan, so my Pittsburgh people will not like that I'm here, but, you know, at least we're not playing football. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're super thankful to have you guys on here.
Yeah.
And been looking forward to getting a chat. It's kind of been a long time planning this, so it's cool that it worked out. And to have all you guys here, it's well, most of you guys here, it's been, yeah.
Someone has to sleep when they drove, you know?
True.
Well, thanks so much for hopping on. First of all, I mean, we're out on this amazing stadium tour. So why don't we start by talking about how you guys have been doing that? It's getting close to the end of this run, right?
Yeah, we got this is the 11th one we've done. We got one more with Luke out here on the stadium tour.
It's almost over. I don't know what I'm going to do without it.
Probably gig a lot more still because you guys are always busy.
Yeah.
Someone told me, I was kind of wondering how this all came about, how y'all met Luke and all that. And didn't he like start by tweeting about you guys or something? I think I saw the tweet. You think he said like, can't stop listening to this band or something.
Yeah, definitely surprise of the decade for us, I think, with that tweet so far.
I think that's also kind of what happened with 49 Winchester. He was like wearing one of their shirts and like they end up selling that shirt out or something.
Yeah. Yeah. The Luke blessings.
Yeah. Yeah. The Luke effect. Yeah, no, that was, we just got a screenshot one day from Sean, our booking agent, sound man. And he was just like, hey, this dude has a whole lot of followers, and he just tweeted about John. Oh, yeah.
Did you know who Luke was? Did you know who Luke was? Hell yeah.
He has a lot of followers.
I'll be honest, I barely did. And I mean, this was back in 2020, and I don't keep up a ton with mainstream country radio these days. And so we were like, oh, whoa. And,
well, I knew who Luke was.
Good.
Yeah, so I freaked out, and then all my friends saw it, and they freaked out and immediately became that much cooler, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was crazy.
Freaked out. Is that how y'all met Cappy? Is that kind of?
Not initially, no. We did, I tell you, the fallout from that tweet was we did have a booking agent called us that week and a record label called us that week.
No shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Several unproductive Zooms later, we just went on about our business.
Yeah. None of those things worked out.
Okay. That's awesome. I was going to say, like, this is why people pay money to have, like, famous people tweet about stuff, because it actually does get shit done.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know what Luke's rate would be for that. It'd be insane. Oh, God.
But it's like, if it's obvious, then it's not as cool.
Right.
The reason why labels and shit reach out is because they're like, Luke knows good music, and so these guys must be great.
Yep.
Yeah, I think they saw the tweet, and then they went and listened to the record, and they liked it. So.
Yep.
There you go. And that's the one of the good reasons that we have social media, right?
Yeah, that's one of the good parts about it.
Yeah, sure. But Cappy, that all happened like a couple years later, year and a half at least. And it was after the Grammys one night, which I did not watch. I think we were on the road.
I watched Luke lean over and talk to Cappy.
And I get this text from Luke at like 12:30 at night. And he's like, y'all have a manager?
No, so Luke reached out to you first.
Yeah, and I was like, no. And then he was like, I think you should talk to my manager. He was like, and then Cappy called us and said, yeah, Luke was telling me at the Grammys, you got to check these guys out.
Hell yeah, so, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Hell yeah. So let's jump into some of that other history. You have a new single out.
Cool.
So you guys want to talk about where you cut that and what's the new single is all about and all that?
Pass it on down.
Andy?
Where were we? We've been all over the place. We were at Echo Lab. We're in Denton, where I live. I live in Denton, Texas.
Mention the mango.
Oh, that's right, yeah. So Zane had, I ended up playing a lot of guitar on this record because Zane busted his hand like literally the day.
Oh, I remember that.
To the studio.
Yeah.
And so it was like, okay, well now he can't play guitar. So I just ended up playing guitar, and then this was one of the tunes that came out of that.
That's why the guitar is so good on
this. Andy played it, yeah. And Paul. Mm-hmm. You should get a close up of that hand.
Well, let's take a look at it.
Yeah, let's take a look at it.
Ouch!
It's pretty gnarly.
Yeah.
Is that a rattlesnake bite, or how did that?
That would be.
It was a Darwin Award, dude. It was me being stupid. The generator has a radiator, and the fan on the radiator spins real fast.
Yep.
And
yep.
It doesn't have a guard on it, and the little tips of the fan, when they're spinning that fast, they're kind of invisible. You don't realize how far it sticks out. And I was just messing with the generator, cleaning some oil that had spilled, and it went brrr on my hand. The fan blades did. And ooh. It was
he stuck it far enough stitches. In the fan that our power went. Yeah.
This
is on the bus, and it looked really cool before it like pooled up with blood when Zane came and was like, ugh. Yeah. Took his other hand away. Tendon.
Yeah, I was getting the bus ready for us to go to the studio. Yeah, and so I was like, crap, change of plans.
I had to drive him
to the hospital.
The ER.
Yeah, I took him to the ER, and we went to a hand specialist ER. This is all of the morning of recording Pass It On Down.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so 29 stitches. The tendon was, you could see it there, but it wasn't cut or anything, which means
a millimeter away from not being able to use his hand.
Yeah. And well, you know,
a finger.
It could have been worse. And then got 29 stitches, and then went on to the studio and had Andy play guitar, and it worked out great, man.
Yeah. And it sounds killer. Is this the record that you guys cut the tape? Did you cut this?
This is not.
This one, no, yeah.
We cut the tape on record 2 and 3, and we just decided to not do that.
It's a pain in the ass, right?
Because it's a pain, man. Yeah. It's fun, but it just takes a lot longer.
Plus, we've been in 3 different studios cutting this record, so it's the consistency of doing tape in 3 different studios across the country is
be tough.
Yeah, pretty tough.
Tell that to Led Zeppelin.
I would if they want to come on the podcast, please. Robert Plant, Jimmy Page, let's do this. Well, that's killer, man. What a terrifying! I also saw that John Mayer just slammed his finger in a truck door, and he's got all those like Grateful Dead shows. So he's seen like the best hand specialist in L.A. and all this and that.
3-finger Garcia.
Yeah, so now he's Django Reinhardt, but he's lost the most important finger, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, that is kind of the Django finger.
Yeah, because he would play with just those 2 fingers, but...
Anyway, we got a lot of cool songs done.
Yeah.
So you said 3 different studios. Where are all 3 of the studios that you guys were in?
Most of it, I think, we did at the Echo Lab, which is out in Denton, Texas. What was the second studio?
We were in L.A.
Clear Lake Recording.
Clear Lake Recording and was it Burbank?
Burbank, yeah.
Was that one we did near the L.A. show?
Yeah,
that's pretty recently.
Yeah, we've been sort of routing that stuff around this tour a little bit.
Instead of just taking a couple days off to do nothing, we've just been going in the studio and getting a couple songs done. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. And just for singles, or is this part of a bigger project? Or
part of album 4.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. Done. We finished it 2 days ago.
Awesome.
I still have to mix it, but...
So, oh, that's right. So you guys are self-producing it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, this one, yeah.
Damn, that's cool.
Yeah.
That is so awesome. It's also because it's like, you know, living in Nashville, it's like we work with artists that all have the same producer sometimes or talk to people. So it's cool to hear a band. So I feel like no matter what you get, if you're a band, you're always going to get something different, something fresh. And if you're self-producing, it's like uniquely Wilder Blue, which is awesome.
Yeah. We can just do whatever we want.
Uniquely Wilder Blue record, I think.
Yeah. I think this is the most... uniquely Wilder Blue record.
Yeah. What are some like the hallmarks of like the Wilder Blue sound, would y'all say?
Definitely some harmonies.
Harmonies.
Lots of harmonies.
That's the first thing I would say for sure.
Sort of like leaning to some bluegrass kind of stuff. I mean, we end up playing banjo and dobro, and Paul plays mandolin a lot. So we kind of, lots of different instruments. He's playing accordion. I ended up playing Mountain Dulcimer on several songs of this record, so we just kind of all over the place.
Yeah, so, I mean, the harmonies are like, I mean, you probably get this a lot, but Eagles-esque, I would say. Obviously, you cover the Eagles song with Luke, so But there's also like that bluegrass thing. One thing y'all do I think is really kind of cool, where it's like not like the double time, but it's like mixing like the regular kind of groove with the double time kind of feel. Yeah. So I just like, I don't know what you call that, but I love that.
Yeah.
Like I love that. That's like my favorite country groove. Yeah. Y'all crush that.
Thanks, man.
And I think there's like, in the songwriting wise, it's like great story songs, but there's also like a lot of like funny stuff, and there's just like a lot of range in the writing.
Yeah.
Between Zane and Paul, those dudes are killing it, but Zane writes most of the stuff.
Yeah, so it's like, can variety be a hallmark?
Yeah. I think
but,
so.
But that's kind of where we're at, you know?
Yeah.
It's like that not every song sounds the same.
Right, but it's like the production all kind of ties it together. It's like the glue, and which is great. And you guys are doing that yourselves, which is so sick.
Yeah, cool. We had Brent Cobb produced album number 3, and Oren Thornton got in there on that as well. But let's see, our first albums 1, 2, and 4 were all self-produced by the band. Yeah.
What does that look like in terms of a band? So does everybody kind of have insight on that process at different times? Is that how it works? Or is there someone that's kind of like the lead on production? Or just have a good engineer with you?
I think whoever's the loudest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty democratic. I mean, it's pretty like democratic. If it sounds good, it's going to end up being on there. If we all like it, you know, for the most part. I would say that there's rarely anything that you have to fight for too hard.
Yeah.
If you really want something, that's just one person that wants it, but... That's what makes it us, I think, putting it through that Wilder Blue filter is what we were talking about.
Yeah, but I got to give Lyndon a shout out here. Lyndon has the most production ideas, and that's what he did for how many, 15 years in the studio, producing and engineering. He usually runs the Pro Tools while we're doing stuff. So Lyndon's pretty much there for everything that goes down. And then I'm usually there for 75-80% of it, and then everybody else kind of filters in. Obviously they focus on their own stuff, and then we all just kind of have opinions about different things. We have a rule: everybody has to say what they really think, and then try not to get butthurt. Those are the two rules.
Important rules.
And it's tough because you guys probably know that a lot of times in the studio, there's, at least in my experience, especially in Nashville environment, there's a tendency for everybody to be positive all the time. That was great, man.
Great,
that was so awesome,
buddy.
Could you give me another option on that? That was so amazing. How about another option? Because you guys are just doing so great today. Everybody nobody wants to say anything negative.
Lyndon does that sometimes.
Because it can get like tense, you know, it can get tense. And we get that way sometimes. I get that way sometimes, and I don't like it about myself. But it's like we have opinions, and we get into stuff, and that's part of what we do as a band, especially self-producing, is we're okay with having a little bit of a frustrating, with going to a frustrating place and then moving through that, because I think a lot of times there's really cool stuff on the other side of that. You know what I mean? Like, let's say somebody's playing a solo and they like it, but other people in the room don't like it. Then sometimes we have to just take a break on that and go, the person has to go write something, spend a couple hours with it and come back. And then even then, sometimes it's not exact. And then, but at the end of the day, we come up with a solo that everybody likes. And if all 5 of us in the band like it, then it's usually pretty, awesome. And I also think that that's kind of, when you're talking about our sound, that's kind of our sound, is the what the all 5 of us sign
off
on and think is cool.
I love it.
It's the most American thing ever.
Yeah. Are you guys doing like a bunch of pre-production, or is it you kind of get in there?
This one,
we did pre-production once for one album. Yeah. For the second album, we did some pre-production. No, third album. For the third album, we did a lot more pre-production than we typically do.
This one, we kind of wander through the woods. We get the tune, just sort of a acoustic guitar version or whatnot, and then we just start pounding it out in the studio.
And then we write down what song we all want to do, like 3 songs. We put them in a hat, and we see which one. Just democracy.
You know? Random chance, democracy, same thing.
No, we tallied to see who got the most. Oh. Yeah, ranked choice.
As far as like what makes the album cuts or which one you're cutting that day?
Yeah.
Usually, what's the next one we're gonna do? We vote, and then we just whichever one gets the most votes. If there's an obvious consensus, then we just go with that. But if there's not an obvious consensus, we'll do the voting thing.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah,
that is. I want to be a fly on the wall when y'all cut a record.
You're welcome, man.
It'll be in like Oregon or something. Or so while you guys are on the road, so I won't be able to be there.
Studios,
literally. So three different studios.
Yeah.
So Texas, L.A.
and Asheville.
That's right, because that's why I hit you up to the cover for me on something.
Echo Mountain. So we got Echo Lab and Echo Mountain.
Yeah, so Echo Mountain is where Charles cut his last record.
That's what I thought,
yeah. And that's where the Avid Brothers.
Yeah,
I saw that.
Yeah. Have you all got to meet those cats yet or no?
Yeah. They're super. No, not the Avid Brothers, but
the Charles guys.
Charles, yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool studio.
I used to open for the Avid Brothers like 20 years ago, so crazy. I know those guys. I did a gig once. It was a CMA Fest or Fanfare. It might have been still Fanfare at that time, but CMA Fest. We did like a gig that wasn't part of CMA Fest, but it was like a block off of Broadway under a tent, and the people organizers were like, oh, there'll be lots of people, man. There's hundreds of thousands of people that come into town, man. It's going to be good exposure. And so it was this tent that was one block off of Broadway, and literally nobody was there, and it rained, and I watched the Avids play for literally 15 people. And then I got on stage, and 12 of those people left, and I played for 3 people. Yeah.
What year was this? 2004?
It would have been, yeah.
Some exposure.
2004.
It worked out. You're here now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same gig with the boys still.
Yeah. And it's funny because Cody Jinks, I did a gig in Fort Worth with him at the Magnolia Motor Lounge, and it was on a Monday night. He invited me over, and we song swapped for 5 people.
Crazy.
And so it's kind of, that's one interesting part of this tour for me, is to have those memories. Sometimes I go up on like the very top level of the stadium and look down at the whole huge thing, and I remember playing with Cody or the Avids for very few people.
I mean, I do that every weekend, same thing. Yeah. Like yesterday we sat on the stage last night and smoked cigars and was like, Nick's like, dude, what is your job?
He took me out on the catwalk, and he's like, here's where I shred guitar, and then here's where I shred guitar, and then here's where I shred guitar.
This is my dope.
Yeah.
On the catwalk.
And, I mean, there's some nights where we'll especially like on Friday nights, we'll just get a golf cart at like 2 or 3 in the morning and just take it all the way to the tippy top, and like, what is it like coming to a Luke Combs show, but like from the highest seat? Because there's these little seats, and they're way up there, and these people are so small. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I'm like, I got to go check out what that's like.
Still pretty great, honestly.
Yeah. I hope so.
I've been up there while y'all are playing, and those people are rocking out. Even way up there, they're like singing along and grooving, and it's pretty cool.
You just got a little bit more money for beer up there.
Yeah, yeah. True. That's right. All the cheaper tickets, more beer.
Yeah. Cheaper tickets, more beer.
Yeah, first time I saw Luke was like a radio show. There was 25 people there for a free show.
Wow.
It's crazy how it always starts somewhere,
No doubt, man.
And that was when Hurricane was already at radio. They were just doing radio tour. It was the start of that.
Straight trying to push.
Yeah.
Here's the next 30 people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super crazy. So you guys have some cool gigs coming up, too, outside of the stadium tour.
Heck yes.
Yeah.
With the homies.
Yeah, out with Flatland.
Oh, yeah. We're doing Red Rocks in October.
That's going to be a good one, huh? Yeah. Have you guys played Red Rocks before?
No.
Awesome.
Never been there.
Yeah. First for everybody.
I've of course never played because I don't play, but I was I was out and saw Luke and the boys when they played there that Mother's Day 1 year. What was that, 4 years ago?
At least, I think. What a cool venue, man. You guys are going to tear it up.
It's amazing.
I'm excited about that
one. I always say that venue, it just being there feels spiritual.
Yeah.
There's something about it, and then when they turn the lights on, it's even more.
It's definitely not the world's worst Monday night gig.
No.
Oh, is that the night you guys are playing?
Yeah.
I need to come to that.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, I do. I was talking to the Flatland guys about it. I'm like, I need to come out and just hang.
Sure.
For sure. And then there's always like,
I want to mention the Mondayness of it.
Oh, but that's great, because then it's like it's probably easier to get comps,
Yeah.
During the day, there's always like super fit people just sprinting. It's like open to the public as like a park.
That's going
to
be Andy.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
You're running the steps.
So And then you guys also do some shows with Charles coming up too, right?
Yeah, November.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then doing some dates with Midland and Lee Bryce.
Hank Jr.?
Hank Jr., Nitty Gritty.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I hope he plays cool Canyonero, but I doubt he will.
I'd love to have Hank Jr. on the podcast.
Yeah, that would be ridiculous.
Goals.
What does he say? He's like icon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. His interview with Bobby Bones is a trip. If you guys haven't watched it, it's legendary. Yeah. They basically almost fight in it. I'm like, yeah, he's like, I'm tired of this. I'm getting out. And Bobby's like, okay. That guy's, he's an icon, though. That'll be insane. I hope you guys get some good stories from that.
I hope so. I think we have a decent shot.
And then you guys got a Billy Bob's headlining show coming up, too.
Yeah, in August.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our first time there.
Have you guys ever played there before, or just as a...
We played there for, it was a TCM, the Texas Country Music Awards. We did like a song up on, but that's about it. Then we did sort of pre-rehearsal for this gig at Billy Bob's. Like, we were practicing, getting our time for how long we had on stage and all that, and running through stuff on a bigger stage.
It was fun.
I love, one thing I love that y'all do is that, speaking of timing for the show, is like, I know that y'all reached out to Jerry, our production manager, and you were like, hey, is it cool if we have a couple minutes before the set to play the national anthem? And Jerry was like, yes, absolutely. And you guys crush that. It's especially with like all the news of other people not crushing it as hard.
Yeah.
Right.
Even better.
Carl Lewis. Yeah.
I love the how'd you guys come up with that rendition? I mean, it's in four instead of three, which is cool. And then like that all the rearms.
That was Zane, man. Yeah, I came up with a completely a cappella version. And we did a shootout, and then he came up with the version. I was like, I like yours. Yeah, yours is better. I love it. Yeah, I think he was inspired by Stapleton.
Oh, yeah, the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, the Lyndon and I both kind of went home and did our own versions where we came up with all the parts and stuff. I just garage banded it out. I tried to, my idea was to pretend like I wrote that song, you know what I mean? And just play it how I would play it if I wrote it. And so, and then, you know, that's kind of my happy place with this band is I get on GarageBand and I layer a bunch of parts because I grew up in the Church of Christ and it's a cappella singing. And so when I was a kid, I sang soprano and then alto and then tenor and then bass. And I used to have this little, I had this little two cassette thing with a microphone, and I could sing onto one cassette and then move it over, and then record a new vocal part along with the other one. So now this cassette has two parts, and then I move it over, and then I put on a third part. And I used to do that and like sing these hymns. I mean, I'm talking about like when I'm 12 or something, and I'm singing all four parts on these hymns and getting all into it and. So anyway, nowadays I get to do that on GarageBand and then bring it to the band. And these guys, we have five singers in the band, so we can actually, whatever we can imagine, we can do. So yeah, I basically just did that arrangement at home on GarageBand and then brought it to the dudes. And then, of course, they bring their own ideas and figure out ways to make it even better. And that's how it ended up that way.
And it's really a life hack. It's like a show hack. At the very beginning, you know, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, please rise and remove your hats for the singing of our national anthem. In fact, me and him take turns doing that today, as Sean.
You have a radio voice of a god, dude. Yeah. I mean, you have a singing voice of a god, too, but I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, man. And then, so everybody has to stop what they're doing, shut up, and listen. So, yeah, it's a pretty cool way to start a show, man.
That's I never even thought about that. It totally makes sense, though. Yeah.
Yeah, what a radio, that voice is. I was just like, what?
Yes, indeed.
Well, you're singing the high harmony, aren't you?
Uh-huh. Well, one of the highs. He's even higher than me, usually.
Oh, really? Yeah. And I was listening to the end of Dixie Darlin' when the BGVs kind of spread out at that last chorus.
Yeah.
And now my body just goes, yes.
There's something about vocal harmonies, I mean, in any genre, but in country music in general, it just fills your heart, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think again, that's one of the things that we try to do a fair amount of, but I'm still surprised when people are very just overwhelmed by the harmonies at shows and stuff. Man, people sure. really pay attention to it and they can hear them. They may not necessarily know what's happening, but
it's the oldest human instrument, man. Yeah. Everybody feels it.
Yep.
I know, man. I could just, I feel it for sure. And it's like, it reminds me of like also those like 90 country bands like Black Hawk or something, oh, where sure. it's just yeah. like mm-hmm. the wall of like gorgeous harmonies, too. Yeah. I will say the records sound great, but if you're listening to this, you got to go out and see Wilder Blue live. I think that's where the magic is, right?
Appreciate that.
We do enjoy playing a good
Come
live show.
Experience the wonder.
Yeah.
Yes.
The wonder.
Buy some merch also. Experience the wonder of buying some merch as well.
The wonder of the merch booth yeah. at any show near you.
What does your guys' merch look like? Is it like Western-y themed? What are you?
Yes, some of it.
What's it leaning?
We have our Palomino shirt, sort of a Montucky
tribute.
Yeah,
tribute.
I have that shirt now. Yeah. Yes. You guys?
Yeah. Kurt has
yes.
one.
I think
of
most
course.
Of the first stuff we did, Zane did most of those designs. Pretty much all that stuff, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, not totally because I wanted to, but just dude, when you're starting off, you just got to do all the jobs because you don't want to have to even pay somebody a couple hundred bucks to do a design. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, I designed the hats and some of the shirts. I found some cheap people on Instagram to do some of the shirts. And yeah, it's just kind of like a. I would say it's outdoorsy. I don't know. Our merch, I feel like our music has some kind of strange quality where it goes good with the mountains or something. I don't know what that is. Because, I mean, we're from Texas. There's not a ton of mountains in Texas. But
I mean, they're out there.
They're out there.
Hill country.
I mean, yeah.
Hill country.
But one thing I will say about y'all's music is that I feel like sometimes when I'm like getting into a band, sometimes I'm like, I have to like, get into them at first.
Yeah.
Like there's like a barrier for entry. Like the first time I heard Tool, I'm like, what is this? Yeah. And now I'm like, this is so sick. I love this band. Yeah. But when I listen to music immediately, I'm just like, yes. It's just like the, I don't know what it is. It's like sometimes I have to like work on liking a band or something. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that totally
and like
makes sense.
When I put y'all's music on, it's like immediately I'm like, yep. And it's not like, oh, I like the singles, whatever. I just put it on.
Yeah, that's cool.
So if you want to check out Wilder Blue, just put it on. It's good music. You don't have to do anything. No work involved. You just listen to it, and right. it sounds good.
It's like that scene in Super Troopers where they throw the governor the shotgun, and he says, spread it on.
Yes.
It works.
Spread it on, you know, or whatever.
Spread
I don't know.
It on.
What's that tune, forgetting the name of it right now, where it's just like, I walked up and asked to buy a girl a drink, and she said, no thanks.
Yeah. Yes.
Excuse me.
Oh, it's a shame Paul didn't make it to
Paul.
This.
Paul wrote that one.
Is that a solo write by Paul?
Yeah,
okay.
Solo write by Paul. Very proud of his solo write for that song.
It did exactly what I told him it was going to do, what it did to me the first time I heard the demo. It was just mandolin and Paul. And I was so wide-eyed when it ended, 1 minute later, that I had to immediately listen to it again.
Yeah.
And that has proven to be the case with everyone I talk to who loves that song.
Yeah. So if you haven't heard the song, it's a story
no spoilers.
Song.
Yeah.
It's about a guy who goes up.
Who strikes out.
Yeah. He is asking a girl to buy her drink. You got to go listen to it. It's insane.
Yeah.
Hey,
first.
A little tidbit about that tune is we in the studio, we played it through the first take. And then Paul at the end, he goes, okay, what's the next song? And he was joking, but we ended up using that take. It's just one take, the first take.
It was the only take that felt good. We after we did that one beautiful take.
Just big, beautiful take.
Big, beautiful take.
The biggest take.
It was the biggest take. We tried so many ways to make it better, and they were all worse. And so we just went back to the first.
I used to listen to like Weird Al records like growing up, sure. And there was one of the songs, and it was like Harvey the Wonder Hamster, and it's like 30-second long, which is probably longer than that song is, honestly. And it just reminds me of that. You're just like, what? Rewind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's it. You had to make sure that you heard it right, and you were like, did I miss half the song, you know?
Yeah, did my phone glitch? Spotify glitch?
But it also just makes you smile immediately once you realize that that was the case, you know?
I love when people don't take themselves, like, too seriously.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's like, if people take themselves too seriously, it kind of, like, flips, and then you can't take them seriously, like, at all. You know what I mean? Mm. It's like these, like, death metal bands, and then they, like, some of them, like, paint their face and dress up as, like, goblins and stuff. Then it's, like, then it's like you're, like, 1 inch away from just being Gore, if you ever listen to Gore.
I love me some Gore.
So it's, like, then you just go from
Gore does it right, dude.
They do it so right. Yeah, because they don't take themselves so seriously. Yeah, I don't know if we can talk about what Gore does on this podcast.
There used to be this great series by the AV Club where they make people pull a cover off the wall. They bring in a band. You get to choose whatever covers are left on their list, 27 different covers, and then you have to arrange it and record it live in their studio. And they stopped doing it like six or seven years ago. And 2 weeks ago, a new one popped up with Gore where they do their version of the I'm Just Ken from the Barbie movie.
No way. Are they dressed up?
Oh, yeah. It's like a parody. It's like the lyrics are different. It's about them.
Mm-hmm.
It's funky. You should check it out. It's very funny.
That's sick.
All right. Maybe we'll have to do a Gore cover of a Ken and Barbie song in the show tonight or something. It would be like, what is going on?
The options are limitless. They do a great Carry On My Wayward Son from the original series
too. Oh yeah. All right, I'll have to check that out.
So why don't we talk about, like, how did you guys all meet and, like, decide to form Water Blue?
Ooh. Zane?
Here's an extra mic.
Yeah.
Is there any coffee left in there?
Yeah.
Can I have a cup?
Probably a trickle. Get you some. Because this may be a long story. Settle in. Well, so I have 7 solo albums. Had a band. Andy was playing bass in my band. A multitude of different milestones led me to the realization that I wanted to start a band and have it be like an even split Democratic band, and that it was going to be the best thing that ever happened to me if I could get the right people. So I started thinking about who those people might be. My goal was for it to be honestly exactly what it turned out to be, which is something with maybe multiple lead singers and lots of harmonies. And so I basically looked around the Texas music scene for exceptional people that were not already in some gig that I was never going to get them out of, right? And
caught a pretty big fish in that category, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, so Paul Eason, in addition to his bus driving abilities, which he displayed last night, which is why he's not here, you know, he has 3 solo albums. And he has a song called Mountains of Nuevo León that they played on the radio on 95.3 The Range in Dallas, shout out. And I always loved that tune. I loved the dude's voice. I thought it was a cool tune. And then I found out that was like Kevin Fowler's lead guitar player. And I was like, what? Because I'd done some shows with Fowler and I'd met Paul, but I just thought of him as Fowler's lead guitar player. So turns out he has these 3 solo albums. He's got this cool voice. And, you know, he's a songwriter. And so I thought, well, maybe he would be interested in the Fowler gig is a good gig. But I thought maybe he'd be interested in doing something where he could write and sing and be more, you know, creatively involved. So I had his number. I didn't know him well, but I just texted him and said, hey, man, you know, crazy talk here. But, you know, what if you and I started a band and, like, just took over the world? What do you think? And I remember I was hanging out like at some friend's house in the backyard. The kids were playing stuff, and he texted me back and was like, "I don't know who you think I am, but yeah, we can talk more about it." he was like, "We can talk more about it tomorrow." And I was like, "Okay." So we got on the phone, we talked about it, and then you know, he was like, "Man, I got your drummer. If you want a singing drummer, man, I got the guy." And he had this experience. If he were here, he'd love to tell the story.
Yeah, he would love to tell the story. I was a fan of Paul's, you know, so I was playing in a band, the Roger Krager band, and we were opening up for Fowler that evening, and we had some libations, and we were partying on Johnny Rodriguez's bus, and I was germing on Paul, and I was like, man, I love you, dude. I love you, man. You know, we got to do something. Remember me. And then I
want to use that line
it
now.
It worked. He remembered.
The first time that Paul and he got the finger point, remember me. Yeah. So anyway, Paul remembered him and was like, I got your singing drummer guy. And he showed me a YouTube video of Lennon playing with Krager and singing Let's Get It On. And I was like, dude, that guy can sing. So we went to Lennon's studio. He was running a studio down in Houston. and the three of us did some singing together. We sang Dixie Darling, just kind of guitar vocal, see what the blend was like.
Yeah, Zane sent me that song, and I was already a Zane Williams fan, and he called me and he was like, hey man, this is Zane Williams. And I was like, well, hello. And I was off the road at that point, just full-time recording studio. And he's like, I got a song I want to send you, and maybe you can, you know, lay some harmonies down or something. And he sent me Dixie Darling, and I listened to it and just got goosies right away. And he's, you know, playing the acoustic guitar, and I thought it was Paul because it was so good. No offense. But I was like, hey man, did you write that song? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, did Paul play acoustic on it? And he was like, no, that was me. And I was like, listen, man, I'm in the band. This is my gig, and it's gonna be a challenge to kick me out. So this is my gig, and you will know eventually, but I just won the gig.
So, remember me.
So then the four of us got together with Andy playing bass and Lennon on drums, Paul on guitar, and then Andy brought his banjo and his dobro, which I knew he played, but I had never, he just played bass in my band, so I had never actually really heard him play. So he overdubbed that stuff on some early demos that we made, and you know, because we were just trying to figure out if we even wanted to do this. Like, before we all quit our other things, we were trying to see if we had something or not. And so we loved his banjo and dobro playing so much that we were like, dude, we just need to find a bass player and move you over to that. So he reluctantly agreed.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually a bass player. Bass is my main instrument, my first instrument.
Bro, fuck you, man.
I know.
Fuck you, dude.
So that's the reason I moved to Denton to go to North Texas to study bass there, and that's kind of how I met Zane through that scene of guys, and played, was it 3 or 4 years in your band before we started this one? Then cut about half the first record on bass.
Yeah.
And then all the dobro and my belly and things like that.
I did get credited as belly slaps, and Andy, he had a bigger belly at that point, and it, for one of the songs, it just had the right timbre, you know. Gotcha.
Smacked the shit out of him
for like an hour.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah,
it was a lot. But, anyway, and so we decided to keep the banjo and the dobro and kind of go like that little bluegrassy sound, mm-hmm. and do some more of that kind of stuff, and try to get a hold of Sean.
I don't know anything about any of that. I just one day I had decided to take 6 months off the road. I was playing with Bree Bagwell. Shout out.
She's not here right now. These cameras. Yeah. But remember me, Bree.
Shout out, Pepsi. No, I decided to take 6 months off the road, and it was my last weekend. I didn't tell anybody, but obviously people knew because they were starting to text me and be like, hey, what do you think about taking this gig? Would you be interested in this gig? We got a bus.
Dude, a bass player that can sing will always work.
Oh, yeah.
If they're cool.
Yeah, good. Well, that's why I wasn't too worried about taking 6 months off. But I didn't get more than 2.5 hours from Houston. Wasn't quite home. I was driving the van back. And Zane called me Sunday afternoon. I didn't have Zane's number. Scooter, I guess, gave it to you. And
Scooter. Old Scoot.
I don't normally answer strange phone numbers. Certainly not anymore. But something compelled me to answer the phone while I was driving. And he's like, hey, man, Zane Williams here. Got your number. Doing this thing. Wondering if you're interested at all. And I was like, let me call you back when I get home. I'm at like 30 minutes from home or something. And like 3 hours later, I called him back. I was like, so what's going on? And he told me that he was starting a band with Paul and Lyndon and Andy. And I had crossed paths with all these people. and was kind of, again, was just like, what? You dragged Lyndon from the studio and Paul from Fowler? And
so you knew Andy these cats sense. Beforehand.
I had met them all being in the scene. I'd come to the studio, so I spent a good couple days with you, I think, at that point. And I had met Paul on the road opening for Fowler, and I met Andy when opening for Zane.
Yeah.
And so I was like, yeah, and that was the other thing. I was like, Andy, the bass player? Like, killer bass player, but what exactly do you need me for? But Zane asked if I would come to the studio. They were in Austin and working on the last two tunes for that first record. And so he said, come on by, and if we mutually dig it, you're welcome to be in the band, and otherwise we'll just pay you for the session if you don't. And I was like, yes, that's a great deal.
Yeah, win-win.
That's a fantastic deal. So, well, I'm here on this white couch, I guess.
And so you, I mean, everyone has to be a singer in the band? Is that kind of the rule in your mind when you were envisioning this, or?
I think that was the idea.
I mean, that was the goal, but I was flexible on it. I mainly would just want everybody to be exceptional in some way. So either sing or write or be like the world's best at your instrument or something. That was my goal. And I will say, before we found Sean Rod, we had two other bass players that it fell through and didn't work out. So that was where it was pretty smooth getting the first four together. And then when we went into bass player world, we hit some stumbling blocks. It was tough. So we had one guy that was in the band and quit before we ever even, had our first gig or anything. And so I was, at that point, I was open to just, we have four singers in the band, let's just get a great bass player and move on. But then I saw that he had stepped away from the Bree Bagwell gig, and I was like, oh, that guy sings like high harmony above Bree. Like, that's the guy.
Yeah, you got it?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
And it's a weird thing, but he really was the timbre of his voice and the where it sits and everything was the what we needed, man. So then when he came to the studio that day, we all just kind of circled up in the lobby and we sang Seven Bridges.
The only thing we all sort of
we were just
knew.
All kind of like, yeah, everybody pick apart and let's just sing. See what this sound like.
Yeah.
And
that's just because I kind of happened to know the high part.
Right, and it gave me goosebumps just hearing the five of us sing that together, and I was like, oh, man. I was like, I hope he can play bass, man, because that sounds good.
On a good day.
Yeah.
Then with our powers combined, we are Captain Wilder Blue.
Pretty Heart.
Much. Yeah.
Earth.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll be Earth.
There is five in there. That could be a merch item. We'll talk. I'll take a third. That's fine.
Okay.
So how has it felt like going from gigs where you were, a member of the band into being a member of the actual band, So I'm sure that's a different thing.
I think it's just, it's all the difference in the world, man. I mean, because everybody feels very invested.
Yeah.
We all own our bus. Mm-hmm. We all get to vote. Everybody feels, because I've been in bands, you're just a player. You have the lead singer. And a lot of tension just happens, man, because if something's not going right, you're trying as hard as you can, but you could just be let go but in this, we're actually building something and you can feel the energy. And I, for whatever reason, we all actually get along too. That was random, but it's worked out.
That's really the part that is, I think, maybe the most shocking. Like, we sound good together. Great. We all play pretty good. Great. But we can survive each other for like long periods of time. That's a miracle.
It's a miracle. Yeah.
It is a miracle.
I mean, you're only on stage for, whether it's 45 minutes or even 2 hours, it's like the other 23 hours or whatever. Yeah, you're on a little tube flying down the highway or whatever. And so if you don't get along, there's no getting away from each other.
Nope.
Yeah.
It's like you're saying, like, I wanted to have the best player or the best, it's like none of the guys in, like, I'll speak to Luke's band, it's like none of us are even close to the best at anything we do.
Yeah.
But it's like we all get along really well, which is like the most important thing too.
Yeah.
I think so.
You guys are pretty badass.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
You guys are all right.
Legally have to say that.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, it's like Paul Franklin's not playing for Luke. You know what I mean? It's not like Brent Mason on guitar, you know? It's like, I mean, Dustin's really fucking good at guitar, but, you know.
So. So in terms of, like, your guys' live show, do you guys play to a click or?
For the most part, yeah.
Mostly click.
Yeah.
And then at these stadium shows, has that been an adjustment just based on the scale for the live show at all?
Yeah, I think, I mean, for me, it's pretty much the same because I'm just, you know, but other guys are walking out in the thrust. Yeah. Click is kind of required when you have to have both ears in.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Last night,
I just turn up the hi-hat real loud.
Yeah. Last night on the bus, Corey, it was like probably 1 a.m. Our keys player, Corey, goes, screw it. I'm just going to ask, what does it feel like going down on the thrust? I'm like, bro, it is so sick. And then Tyler's like, it's the best feeling in the world. And Jamie's like, yeah, sorry, dude. You're missing out. He's like, I knew it.
I imagine the difference between what time we go on and what time you go on as far as going down there is probably way more exciting. Yeah.
Still crazy to think about, like, even in the early slots, how many people are here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, these.
We were saying last week in, where were we? It seemed like there was an earlier crowd last week that came in.
DC.
Yeah.
Yeah, because sometimes it's like that opening slot. I remember when Brent was out with us, it was like, there's 20,000 people there, which is not even half full, but there's 20,000 people. Yeah. How many people does Billy Bob's hold?
50,000.
10 million people. You know what I mean? So it's like multiple Billy Bobs sold out just out there.
Yeah. Crazy.
I know, it's like the first stadium show that we did ever sold more tickets than the entirety of our club show in one show. You know, so it's like, it's a lot of fucking people out there, which is awesome.
Is there anything you guys do specifically? I mean, I know we talked about the national anthem, but to like make sure that those fans leave Waterblue fans or anything
try to get out there and do our best.
Yeah. Try real hard. You know, sing our faces off. Yeah. Give it a solid 99% to 100% effort.
Yeah, it shows, man. That's awesome. Sing good, play good, make love good. Yeah. All right.
Anything else that you guys have coming down the line?
Do we need to plug anything else? We got the new single coming out. We talked about that.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a question about the new single.
What a lovely number, 23. Yeah. August 23.
What's it called again? Say it again.
It's called Pass It On Down, the new single by the Wilder Blue.
Thank you.
out August 23rd, anywhere records are streamed. But yeah, I mean, that's the tip of the iceberg for record 4. We're pretty close. It's pretty close to that.
I'm just excited about album 4. We don't know what to call it yet, but man, we've just been on an absolute tear. You're going to freak out, man. You're going to freak out. We got some certified bangers.
Hell yeah.
That it's our best work by far.
Hell yeah. All right, boys. Well, appreciate having y'all on. I'll let you go sound check.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much. I'm glad this worked out.
Yeah, us too.
And thanks for taking time on your busy day. We do appreciate it.
Of course.
You got it.
All right, guys. Well, I'm Nikki T.
I'm Kurt Ozon, and we'll see you in the front row.